Welcome into the Garden Hotline on this beautiful Saturday morning. Yesterday was not beautiful. Michelle Reeser-West is here from Pointer Landscaping. She's been on several times, and we're happy to have her back. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning.
First question is, did you take any damage at your house?
I didn't. We were lucky. I'm in the St. Charles area and didn't see a lot of storm damage at all where I live. So I'm just really grateful that, the people that I love and care about were safe from any storm damage. But I know a lot of people around town weren't so lucky.
No, it was unfortunate. Five people, passed away in the storm. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot.
Yeah.
And a tornado touchdown, which is pretty rare in the city. To have a tornado, and the damage could be, they're saying it could have been an EF2, maybe even an EF3, which is pretty significant. That's not a small storm.
No, and some of the footage that you're seeing on TV and the internet is just incredible to see. I mean, it's just some really devastating damage to structures and trees and things like that. But it's wild how destructive that storm was.
When one of these storms comes through, what happens at Pointer? What kinds of calls are you getting to deal with in the next few days?
So, we haven't actually been getting too many yet. We've got a few. We actually checked in on a few of our clients that were in the past and asking, if they needed our help. But, right now, I think a lot of people are just kind of taking stock and assessing things. But I'm sure we'll have, a ton of calls and emails to come out and help with that cleanup after the fact.
Well, let's give out the phone number if you have a question for Michelle this morning on any topic related to gardening or your yard. It is 314-436-7900. I know a lot of people are dealing with no power.
Yeah.
There's about 80,000 in Missouri, another 20,000 in Illinois. So 100,000 people this morning don't have power, which that's a lot too. And that takes sometimes days to restore.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that a lot of people will be dealing with that this morning, but we hope that if you have a question for Michelle, that you'll call in at 314-436-7900. Anything else this time of year besides storm damage that you're dealing with at Pointer?
Yeah, I mean, we're obviously the storm damage. It's really been a lot of rain in general. April, I think we talked about, was the wettest April or one of the wettest Aprils in our history. And, we've had a lot of effects in our landscape because of all of that moisture. We're seeing a lot of rapid weed growth with the rain and the warmer temperatures. We're seeing a lot of pest and disease problems out there, specifically related to fungal issues from the moisture. But, it's just typical spring right now. We're in the thick of it. And, this weather on top of it isn't helping.
So in terms of the fungal problems, what does that affect mostly?
We're seeing it a lot on trees right now. There's a anthracnose is a fungal thing. We're seeing it a lot on trees. I think I have a maple in my yard that's having it. Sycamores are having it. You can kind of start seeing on the leaves there are these little brown dots along the margin and on the leaves. And sometimes it has some curling that you see, but the trees will ultimately drop those leaves, and they may drop all of them or they may just drop a few. But it's affecting a lot of trees. We're seeing a lot of fungal things on perennials and things like that might be just overcrowded or in morning shade, and they have a lot of water on their leaves through the morning. The perennials tend to recover, and so do the trees. Really, a fungal is a lot of times just aesthetic and just looks bad. And hopefully most of those plants will recover, but just a lot of fungus out there right now.
Well, whether you're dealing with a fungal issue or something else that's on your mind to ask Michelle, the number is 314-436-7900. Let's go to the phones. Tony, good morning. You are on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I have a question about periwinkle.
Yeah, what's your question?
A few years ago, I have a terrace behind my house that was covered with blue rug juniper, And that was fine for many years that it was dying off, so I dug it all up, and I put periwinkle in about 3 years ago to kind of fill in that space because it's just too steep to cut with a lawnmower. And I made a discovery that I can share that if you're using preen to control weeds in something like that, it also controls the periwinkle. It didn't let it spread. Yeah. So I finally figured that out, and it's spreading, but I still have tons and tons of dandelions and stuff in there, and I'm trying to figure out how to control the weeds but not control the periwinkle.
Yeah, it's a good question, an interesting point. When you put down pre-emergent typically stops the germination of seeds, and it also will prevent the plants that spread, like periwinkle or vinca, from rooting in on the surface, which is one of the ways that periwinkle spreads, is it roots in on the surface and it sends out some rhizomes underground to spread in that way. And pre-emergent can definitely affect that. So part of one of the reasons that we put ground cover out there is to help with weed suppression, because plants are going to cover the earth, whether it's weeds or the intentional plants that we're planting like this ground cover. So until that ground cover gets established, of course, weeds are going to be an issue. And it's kind of, like a battle sometimes to get ground cover areas established and controlling the weeds. So one of the things that you're just, I think, going to have to do is either A, hand weed and keep those under control, but you could also just be spot spraying with, an herbicide and just getting out there and being careful to not, you're not spraying everywhere, but you're just spraying individual weeds. And you're also trying to, eliminate any kind of flowers from those weeds, because the flowers will turn into weed seeds and then those can be carried off and then germinate in that way. So unfortunately, when you're trying to establish ground cover areas or, new maintenance beds or landscape beds, before those plants get big and established, there's a lot of open mulch space or a lot of open bed space. So sometimes it's just a labor intensive process until it gets established. But I would recommend spot spraying with an herbicide or just getting out there and hand pulling weeds.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good luck. I hope that gets established for you quickly so you don't have as much maintenance on your hands there.
Thanks for the call, Tony. It is 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline to talk to Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer and ask your question. We are off and running and we'll continue after a short break. Stay tuned. It is the Garden Hotline on 104.1 FM, KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. The voice answering your questions today, Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Michelle, let me give the phone number out again. 314-436-7900. That's the number to call and ask your question of Michelle. I wanted to ask you about your own setup at home.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about what you have and, how much you have to take care of and maintain, or whether you just let it go or what?
I bought my house back in 2020, and there wasn't like a ton of landscaping, but it wasn't anything that I prefer or wanted, and I kind of on a whim just took it all out without having much of a plan or anything like that. So just kind of removed everything, and then slowly over the last 5 years I've been trying to have thoughtful plans, because it's very easy for me to bring home random plants from random projects or leftovers and things like that. So I've been really trying to resist the urge to just have a random planting in my yard and have it be a little bit more thoughtful. But so over the last 5 years, I've just been trying to slowly create beds and removing grass areas, because that's my goal, is to have as little grass as possible. But it's a lot of work, and I'm really lucky because I work in landscape maintenance, and I have a lot of guys that help me with the process of weeding and getting mulch down and things like that. But I, one of the things that I love is, in the evenings and on weekends, is to spend time in the garden doing weeding and planting and things like that. But I kind of have a a more wild aesthetic. You know, there are people that are really into natives or really into some things. I kind of have a mixture of everything. I use my garden a lot sometimes for trialing new plants, or there's things out there that I'm interested in or that I haven't worked with a lot. So I'll plant things just to see how they do. But yeah, I think it's great. I think there's a lot of work to do, in my opinion. People come over and are always so impressed with the yard, and I'm always like, it's a work in progress, but, it's fun. I think it's a fun little thing to do in my spare time.
So you still have fun with it, even though it's your job.
Yeah. I mean, there are times that I am definitely not into it. Like right now when we're super busy, you know, I'm working 60 hours a week out in the field a lot, and then coming back and having to do paperwork. The last thing I want to do is come home and weed. And if you were in my garden today, you would see so many weeds. I think the maple helicopters, the Samaras, have germinated, and I have little baby maples I think everywhere. There's probably thousands of them in my yard that I have yet to start pulling weeds because I didn't get pre-emergent down like I've been telling people to do for the last, you know, several months. But yeah, lots of weeds in the yard right now.
Where is Pointer based?
We're down in Baldwin. We're kind of near Baldwin / Wildwood area. We're kind of down behind Castlewood Park, down by the Merrimack. But yeah, so that's the office, but we really are all over St. Louis, Illinois. We pretty much try to stay within about an hour radius of the office. But yeah, we work all over the metropolitan area and into Illinois.
And when we have a storm like yesterday and there's a lot of damage, is that part of the service that you provide, cleaning up people's yards, or does someone else have to do that?
Oh, no, part of what we provide, we have a maintenance department, and we have maintenance contracts with a lot of our clients. You know, a lot of our clients are design build clients, where they come in and they want to design and then we install it. And then, you know, we sometimes walk away from those. But one of the things that we try to do is to come up with a comprehensive maintenance plan, an aftercare plan for these plantings, and we can take care of it. And, you know, a lot of our clients, we go there once a month or every couple weeks or every other month, depending on the property or how interested they are in gardening and doing some tasks there on their own. But it's definitely something, you know, that we'll get calls from our existing maintenance clients to come out and say, hey, we need a visit early because of this storm damage. Or we'll have, you know, some of our previous design build clients that will call and say, hey, we've got some damage, can you come over? And then we have, you know, just anybody calling off the street that just needs some help. So it's definitely one of the services we provide, and we'll be ready to go on Monday with whatever kind of storm cleanup that people need us to do. So I'm sure that'll take up the first part of our week.
If you have a question for Michelle about your yard, your garden, 314-436-7900. That is the garden hotline. We are an at-your-service program, so take advantage of that this morning. We talked 2 weeks ago on Derby Day about roses.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know this, but today is the Preakness.
That is is there a flower for that?
There is.
What is it?
The Black-Eyed Susan.
Oh, nice.
What
Why?
Can you tell us about? I think it's just like the roses for the Derby. It's a tradition that started decades. I mean, the Preakness is 150 years old. The Derby is too.
Where's that one? I know that you are into horse racing, yeah, a bit. Where's the Preakness located?
It's in Baltimore.
It's Baltimore.
This is the last year it is going to be at the old Pimlico racetrack. They're tearing it down and building mm-hmm. another one. But anyway, the point is Black-Eyed Susan. What can you tell us about this?
I got distracted. That's not often that I go off topic from plants to something else, but I can go right back to plants. Black-Eyed Susans are really popular plants. There are, you know, lots of different varieties out there. Some are native. But it's been around. It's kind of a tried and true plant. I think a lot of people have them in their garden. I think I have a few still. I've been trying to slowly get rid of them because they are, for me, they're a little weedy. They're spready. They do just keep spreading over time from the seeds. And Not always deer resistant, which I don't really have to worry about in St. Charles, but for our clients and, you know, outside that 270 loop, we're really struggling with deer pressure. So, you know, black-eyed Susans used to be one that they said were
deer
were,
pressure.
Yeah. Deer pressure. There's
like,
pressure.
Like
there's
peer
eating.
Pressure. That's
they're
pretty
eating.
Funny.
Yeah. The pressure from the deer. No, they're eating or rubbing is typically the deer pressure, but they get eaten a lot by deer and they used to be considered a deer resistant plant, but I will tell you right now that they are not. So we don't often use them, in our designs at Pointer just because we are trying to, you know, use products that are deer resistant. And that is definitely not one of them. It's one of the things that we have to think about. But
do they grow well here?
They grow very well here. Okay, so it's a good plant. They like it hot and dry for the most part. Full sun. They don't need a lot of water. It really isn't that much maintenance. I mean, you really just have to deadhead them. And if you deadhead them before they go to seed, then you won't have as many babies in your garden or as much weediness. But a typically low maintenance plant, not a lot of pest and disease issues other than deer. So it's an all around good plant.
They're really pretty.
Yeah,
too.
They're still popular. They're still around now, and they have been for a long time because they are. I mean, it's an old fashioned kind of plant, I think, mm-hmm. but it's. It's a tough plant. It's a good one, you know, that especially if you're not a really great gardener and you want a plant that's, you know, going to grow on its own and other than, you know, keeping it in check and deadheading it every now and then, there's not a lot to do with it.
What are some other low maintenance plants or tough, however you want to put it, that are trendy right now?
You know, a big one. Erin, who's on here all the time, is one of her favorite ones, go-tos that she suggests that's a non-native. She is typically a native girl, but the one that I think is really common and kind of trendy right now and I love very much is the Calamintha. And there's a cultivar that's pretty popular right now that's called Montrose White. And it's I think it's a fun one because it's kind of big and wispy. It smells incredible. It's in the mint family. And it's a long bloomer. So it hasn't started blooming yet. But once it starts blooming here soon, it will bloom all the way till after frost. And it's a really big attractor of pollinators. So it's just loaded with bees all summer long. So low maintenance, again, you have to cut it back once a year. And that's literally all you have to do to this plant. So and it doesn't need a lot of care because it also likes it kind of hot and dry. So full sun, doesn't need a lot of watering once it's established. So but that's a really popular plant right now. I see a lot of allium out there, a lot of the cultivar I see a lot is Millennium, and we use it a lot. It's also another really great plant. And both of these plants I just suggested are deer resistant, which is a trigger word for me, deer resistant. But Allium Millennium is a really cool one. It's really cute because it shoots up these little purple balls. And they're just kind of whimsical looking, but it's a long bloomer too. I think other people use alliums a lot as a bulb or the bulb form. And there's a lot of those that are blooming now or kind of waning. The bloom is almost over on those, but those tend to be a little bit bigger. These Allium Millennium are a little bit smaller, about, I don't know, 12 to 18 inches. And just a really great plant, low maintenance, doesn't need a lot of care, and also a great pollinator attractor. So those are two that we're using and seeing a lot right now.
I looked up Calamintha, mm-hmm. and it actually has the word mint inside of it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Look at that.
Easy
it
to remember.
Smells amazing. It's kind of a minty smell, but kind of not too. I don't know how to describe it. It's definitely, you can tell it's in the mint family, but it's an amazing smell. It smells so good. And you can smell it from far away. And if you crush it up, it smells even better. So it's a good one.
Those are good tips. All right, let's give out the phone number again. It's 314-436-7900. That is the Garden Hotline. Your opportunity to ask a question of Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping about your yard, your garden, what's going on with your trees or flowers. We're going to get to those phone calls in just a moment on 104.1 FM KMOX. Welcome back to the Garden Hotline. The number to call and reach Michelle Reeser-West with your question is 314-436-7900. We are at your service to answer your questions. this May about gardening, about trees and plants, and what may happen over the summer. I just learned something about Michelle that I did not know. I want to ask about this, though. We were talking about the Preakness being today, but there's another race coming up later this month that happens every year. It's very famous, the Indy 500. And you've been to the Indy 500 like almost every year for the last 35?
Yeah, it's my family reunion. It's kind of a weird family reunion, I guess. But yeah, we've had members of our family going. I mean, if I've been going for 35 years, they've been probably going for 50 or 60 years. I'll have to figure out what the longest tenure is of the Indy 500 this year. But yeah, we have a pretty good sized group. And every year my family goes and we sit and watch race cars go really fast and turn left for a few hours. So it's really fun. We enjoy it. I'm trying to think if there's any plant related things with the Indy 500.
I know it's milk.
Yeah, the milk at the end. The winner has to has to drink milk at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't think of any plant-related things. I'll have to think about that. But yeah, it's next weekend, so Memorial Day weekend. Every year, it's a family reunion at the Indy 500.
314-436-7900 is the Garden Hotline, and let's go to the phones. Sherry, you are on. Good morning.
Good morning. Michelle, I have a couple of questions. Well, I'll be brief, though. When's the best time to use soil candy? Because our weather has been so crazy, I don't know what to do.
When is the best time to use soil what?
Soil candy. I ordered it from online. They say it's supposed to help the soil.
I don't know what soil candy is. Do you know? I mean, is it like a fertilizer?
It's a fertilizer. It's a liquid. And it's supposed to be really good. And then I have bone meal, too. I ordered that. Should I just stick with bone meal?
I mean, bone meal is great. So I just Googled really quickly what soil candy was. I'm on their website. But yeah, it just looks like some really great fertilizing things that you put in the soil. So it's actually a pretty decent time. I mean, I like to do most of my fertilizing, depending on what kind of plants I'm fertilizing, either like right after they bloom. So are you pruning, or are you fertilizing shrubs or perennials, or what do you
have? I have a vegetable garden, and then I have sedum.
Yeah.
And so my vegetable garden is really doing well, except for the ones I started from seeds, they're really slow. But and the oregano is very slow, but the broccoli came out great. The garlic, the bulbs from the garlic came out great. My neighbor already told me to wait a couple of years before I can get to the garlic. Let me see. The eggplant came out fine. Well, I got quite a few things going on. And then I was going to also ask you, I want to put in sedum in a grassy spot. I have a grassy, well, it's really more a weedy spot. That's why I'm replacing it. Can you walk me briefly through it? I don't know. Should I put the fabric down and then punch holes in it to put the sedum in each spot? Or how do you do that?
So I typically don't recommend soil fabric. I know a lot of people still use it, but the fabric... basically, people use that as a weed barrier, but then you're going to put, mulch or other organic materials that will break down over time, and the weed seeds will just be on top of that anyway, and you're still going to get weeds over time. It may suppress weeds for the first season or two, but in time, you're still going to have a lot of weeds on top of that weed fabric. So it's kind of a process that you don't necessarily need to do. What I would recommend doing is getting rid of, the grass, whatever grassy area that you want to plant in, removing that in some way, either by hand, by herbicide, or you can put, something down over the top of it, like plastic or cardboard, to kill back that grass before planting. And then, once that grass is removed and you have bare soil, then you can plant your sedum directly into that and then mulch, do a little bit of mulch around the base to help with the weed suppression and holding that moisture in.
Okay. And then my house plants, the aloe veras, they're thin legs now. I don't know, the leaves are thin. Is that because I don't have enough sunlight, or they want to go outside, or what?
Yeah, it could be. That sounds like maybe not enough sunlight. Typically, if it's a water issue, it kind of changes color. You know, things get a little bit leggy, they say, or they stretch and are skinnier when they're looking for sunlight. So, you know, Aloe loves to be outside every year. I take mine. I have a big one that I take outside every year, and they love it when it gets hot like it is now. So if that's an option for you, I think that would be great for the plant to take it outside and let
it get the jade plant likes it.
Yep, jade likes it too. A lot of our house plants really like these warm temperatures. You know, they don't always like to be in direct sunlight, so keep that in mind. A lot of those, aloe could definitely take direct sunlight if the pot's big enough, so it doesn't dry out. I mean, it likes it dry, but doesn't want to be too dry. But yeah, a lot of house plants love to be taken outside, so highly recommend that.
And then the last question is my lily. My lily has a lot of burnt leaves, and I don't get that much sun in here to have that many burnt leaves. I don't know what's happening. I have a little water ball where it measures the water. So, and I only put water in it, you know, when it's dry. So I don't know what am I doing wrong.
Or is it
should I
like
be cutting
a peace lily? What kind of peace?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a peace lily. I have a love-hate relationship with my peace lily, and I do think it's a consistent watering issue most of the time. When it gets those little burnt tips, and your little watering contraption, those things help a lot. Depending, I don't know what kind it is, but those do help a lot because consistent watering is definitely key. Letting it dry out in between, you know, waterings is definitely helpful. But really, just getting on a good routine with those and having consistent watering really helps. And then if you do have those leaves browning out, then you can go ahead and just cut them off. You just kind of cut them as close to the soil level as possible.
Okay, just going to deadhead them.
Yep.
Because there are little sprouts coming in for the little ones. And then it's bloomed. It has a white flower. So,
yep.
Okay.
That sounds good,
okay,
other than the
off.
Little brown leaves. So, yep, happy gardening.
Okay. The bone meal, just put the bone meal in then.
Yep.
I can do it now.
Yeah, and it sounds like that soil candy can be mixed into the soil now as well.
Okay. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck. I hope you have a good crop this summer.
Thanks for calling
me,
Sherry.
So too.
We appreciate
Bye-bye.
It.
Bye-bye.
The number is 314-436-7900 for you to reach Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping to ask your question. And I think Sherry knew something on segues, because guess what?
What?
The official flower of the Indy 500 is the lily.
Is it?
They have 33 lilies on the winner's wreath, and that represents one for each driver in the race. And it's been a tradition for a long time. Also, the number 13 has been, for many decades, it was banned. You couldn't even use the number 13
on
your car.
Or anything, yeah.
Bad luck also to paint your car green. These are Indy 500
specific. Oh, there's a lot of
superstitions.
I didn't know. I know there was a wreath, but I didn't know it was made out of lilies. That's interesting.
Yeah.
There's a lot of superstitions. It's such a track and a race that's just filled with so much tradition and history.
It is. Actually, another thing is peanuts are considered bad luck at the Indy 500.
Well, why are you getting this information?
It's a thing just called Google.
Google. Peanuts. I wonder, but does it say why peanuts are bad?
It doesn't. It's an ambiguous, long-standing superstition against eating peanuts. It dates back to the 40s. Who knows? I don't know. I love stuff like that.
Yeah. So we actually, my family's really into, I want to go back to the Indy 500 because I love it so much, but we sponsor a lap every year in honor of, you know, our people that aren't with us anymore, in honor of my grandpa, my uncle, and my dad. So we have the same lap every year that we sponsor. And this year we have one of my cousins is actually overseas serving in the military. So we have his family purchased a little thing where his name will actually be on the car of Graham Rahal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So his name's printed on there. And a lot of people did. It was a fundraiser where you could, you know, pay money and have your name on the car, but Graham Rahal's car will have my cousin,
nice.
Joe Davis, Sergeant Joe Davis on the car on next Sunday. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually never been to the Indy 500, but I have been to IndyCar races on the streets.
Yeah.
Those are fun too.
Yeah. I've never been to a street race, but we'll go to the St. Louis race that's coming up. And then, I'm also going to Road America this year, which is
when is the St. Louis race?
June. June. It's like the second weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. It's around Father's Day.
Yeah.
Over at Worldwide. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, thanks
We're really talking a lot of plants today.
Well, the number to call.
Yeah, let's talk about plants.
Come on.
Call me.
Yeah, call me. 314-436-7900. That is the number to call and ask your question of Michelle. We are going to continue in just a moment on 104.1 FM KMOX. We are in the first hour of the Garden Hotline on a beautiful Saturday morning. Yesterday, the weather was obviously atrocious and several people lost their lives, unfortunately. We are going to talk a little bit about storm damage and how to kind of go about that repair in just a moment with Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. But let's continue with the phone calls right now. 314-436-7900 is the number. Jason, you're up next. Good morning, Jason.
Hi, good morning. Thanks again for taking my call. I had a question about my lawn, which I have zoysia grass, and there's a section on the slope part of my hill next to my neighbor's, where my neighbor's lawn starts, where it's like browning compared to the rest of the grass, and almost like it's dying off or something. I didn't know if it was disease or if there's because of my neighbor's lawn encroaching on it or something. Or
yeah, I mean it's hard to tell without seeing it, but we are seeing a lot of disease. And we were talking a little bit about fungal issues earlier in the show, and grass is also subject to that. And zoysias, you know, can get some fungal issues. It could be, you know, but it might be something under the soil that's causing it. It could be a lot of things. But if it's something that's never happened in that area for you before, it may be fungal related or disease related.
And how would I take care of that? Like if it is fungal,
there would be either granular fungicide that you can get or a spray fungicide that you can get just for the turf. I would go out there. I don't know if you've gone out and kind of investigated that area. If you kind of pull the grass back or pull some pieces of the grass out and kind of investigate to see if there's any brown spots or browning or what that actually looks like. If it's just the whole blade that's brown, or if there's like evidence of fungal, which is typically spot or streaking, If that's what you're seeing, then that's most likely a disease issue. So you know, treating that, when you do have a fungal issue, once the fungus is there, there's nothing you can really do about it other than try to prevent it from spreading further and you know, just keeping those grass clippings clean and not spreading it to other
and
areas.
Detaching it and stuff like that.
Correct.
You mean like detaching it. Okay. Yep. And one little quick question about the same zoysia grass, how you mow it. Like somebody told me to mow it one way this time, the next time you mow, do it another way, like across way, and then just keep alternating. Is that correct?
I think people do that or say that. I think that's a common thing that, you know, when you're mowing your grass, to mow in different directions. With zoysia, I think your key is to just keep it short. It prefers super short cuttings as opposed to, you know, your cool season grasses prefer 3 to 4 inches. So keeping it short will also help with pests and
disease. Oh my
goodness,
that may be my problem.
Yeah.
I've always used the highest setting on my lawnmower, so you're saying I needed to cut it down a little lower.
Yeah, zoysia, if you have a zoysia, it prefers to be lower. You could do 1 to 2 inches on zoysia, and then your, you know, fescue and things like that prefer 3-4 inches.
Man, that was something really awesome I just learned, so thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling in, Jason. The number is 314-436-7900 to ask your question of Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. Let's go to Tom. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline. Hello, Tom.
Hello?
Yep. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've got a serviceberry that's probably been in 6 or 8 years, and I'd sure like it to look a little healthier, you know, more leaves and more growth that I'm not seeing that much. Is all this rain that we've had, has that been bad for it?
It can be. You know, service berries I love. It's a native. Great berries are edible for humans and for birds, and they're typically low maintenance. They don't have a lot of pest and disease issues. Do you have it planted in full sun, or is it in a little bit of shade?
No, it's in full sun in a cul-de-sac island.
Great, and it's been typically healthy up until this season, or
pretty much. Yeah.
So one of the things that you can do when service berries have been established for a while, sometimes they can get a little thin or leggy if you haven't done a lot of pruning. You can, after these berries, I don't know, I like to wait until after the berry's done, which they should be ripening soon. So once the berries are done with their thing, then I would recommend a cutback. And what that will do is you push the top down, and that would promote some growth from the base, allowing a little bit of that things that come up, the suckers or the new growth from the base, to fill in. Will help it to have some better health overall. It can get a little bit of fungal stuff on the leaves if you notice that it's dropping a little leaves or they're turning yellow. Mine last year had a little bit of fungal and it dropped its leaves early. It had early fall color and dropped its leaves earlier than normal, but it flushed out really nicely this season.
This is a very bushy one, lots of branches. You know, no big solid one, but a whole bunch of little ones.
Yeah, so I think after the berries, I think cut it back by at least a third, and then even consider thinning out some of the older ones and allowing some new growth to come in.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck. It's a great one. I don't know if everybody's familiar with that, but it's a great shrub that we like to use a lot. Again, a native. It's one of the early bloomers out there, and one of the first ones to bloom in the spring, white bloom. Great, delicious berries. It's kind of like a combination of, I don't know, like a blueberry and something else. But it's just a very mild flavor. People make jams and jellies and stuff out of it. I think that seems like a really tedious process to pick as enough service berries in order to make a jam or a jelly. I just kind of nibble on them when I'm out in the garden. But it's one of my favorite shrubs/trees.
Thanks for calling in, Tom. The number is 314-436-7900, the Garden Hotline on KMOX. A lot of people are dealing with storm damage this morning. What kind of recommendations do you have for people to, you know, clean up the situation if you're not doing it or if they're doing it by themselves? What are some guidelines?
I mean, I think this morning your first thing is making sure you're safe. I mean, I think a lot of branches that are down could be on wires, and it could be, you know, on your house or things like that. So, you know, being safe first and foremost and making sure that, you know, if it is, you know, in your house or maybe potentially on a power line, that you wait for a professional to come out. But if that's not the case, if you just have, you know, some broken branches, and I saw some significant storm damage out there to trees. But if you're one of those people that maybe just have a few broken branches or one that's been, you know, kind of ripped off and maybe it's just hanging there, you know, getting those types of things cleaned up first is what you want to do. You know, if you have one that's still attached and it's kind of hanging, it's important to kind of cut that from the bottom side so that it doesn't pull that attached lower part down and cause an even bigger wound. But the biggest issue, I think, really with all of this tree damage is, you know, every time one of those branches break off or become damaged in some way, that's a wound that's opening your tree up to pest and disease. So pruning that and having a good cut, a clean cut, so the tree can heal is really going to be better for the long-term health of the tree. And then, you know, there's a lot of storm damage right now that maybe it's not, you know, your house or something else is a bigger priority. I think getting anything that might potentially fall or cause more damage cleaned up right now is probably the most important thing. And then if you have to wait a little bit to, you know, if it's just something that's broken, but it's not necessarily a safety concern, that can wait a little bit. And then if you do have major damage, you know, a lot of people are like, should I keep this tree? Should I, you know, do we need to remove it? Those are things that you just might need to wait and see in time.
We'll talk more about that in the next hour and take your phone calls on the Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900. Answering your questions today on the Garden Hotline, Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. The number to call to ask your question is 314-436-7900. Let's go right to the phones. Norma, good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I want to talk about bulbs. I have a problem with bulbs in my yard. I don't care if it's hyacinths, daffodils, tulip, whatever. they just, when I plant them, they come up like one time, and then the next season, they just don't even emerge at all, hardly. Is something eating them? Is it moles? What is it? I just am so frustrated by it.
So, yeah, so there could be a lot of things going on, or at least a couple that are common. So tulips in general are, you know, I consider them mostly annuals. They do not reliably come back year after year. There are some varieties that will. But most of the time, at least in a professional setting, we are using tulips as a seasonal display that we use one time and then we dig them out. You know, there are things like daffodils and hyacinth that are typically reliable and come back every year. But, you know, if you're having issues with all different types of bulbs, that could mean that you have something eating them. You know, a lot of times squirrels will get to bulbs and they're completely decimated and you don't get anything. So, you know, you can put some product down. A lot of people will put like a chicken wire over the top of where they put where they plant bulbs and then put mulch over the top of it so you can't see it. But that can help prevent squirrels or any kind of animals from digging them up and eating them. But they are delicious food for some animals. But I don't know what else to tell you other than, I mean, it can be even, you know, soil related if it's an issue for all different types of bulbs. Are you having any issues with any other plants or just bulbs specifically?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with that. Can I put cayenne on it to deter squirrels?
Yeah, you can. If you'd use that, you would need to do it regularly because that will dissipate over time. So, you know, every few weeks you should go out and do it. It typically, you know, isn't happening, you know, it happens mostly through the winter. So, you know, you just got to get out there and do it every few weeks.
Yeah, okay. I have seen a lot of businesses around the area that plant their tulips every year. They put the bulbs in every year, and then when the tulips are done, then they put in like impatiens or
that's
something
right.
like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep. That's what
yeah.
we typically
well,
do with
you.
Tulips. Yeah. Good luck to you. I hope those
thank
critters
you
leave
much.
your tulips alone.
Thanks for calling in, Norma, at 314-436-7900. That's the number to reach Michelle and ask your question this morning. Let's get back to storm damage for a minute. Obviously, as you pointed out a few minutes ago, the most important thing is safety right now, because if you have any branches that are touching power lines, obviously you don't want to be dealing with that at all. So safety is first. That's the priority this morning. And then, but later, if you do have some damage in your yard, what can you do to, I guess, make use of it? Maybe through mulching or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, you could use any of the wood chips if you had if the tree company that comes out chips up your wood, or you have a wood chipper or something, you could definitely use that. It's important to let those wood chips dry out a little bit if you're going to use them around plantings. But I mean, other than that, I mean, you could maybe do a little craft project with some of the wood or use it for firewood or something like that. But yeah, I don't know.
Can you use the word graph, right? Did you just say graph?
I don't think so.
Oh, what did you say?
I don't.
Craft.
Yeah. I've already forgotten what I said.
craft project.
Craft.
I see. So yeah. There aren't that many uses for the.
I mean, firewood or like you said, mulch. I can't think of anything else right now.
Well, I know one of your favorite words is pruning.
Yes.
You love to prune.
Mm-hmm.
This time of year, what are people? What should people think about in terms of pruning?
This time of year, we're kind of switching our focus to, you know, we're doing a lot of evergreen pruning, like boxwoods and things like that. So it's definitely time to be doing your shearing of your evergreens. Even, you know, we're doing a lot of burning bushes as well. But one of that's not the type of pruning that interests me at all. I love doing hand pruning. So the things that we are also shifting our focus to are those plants that bloom in early spring that are done blooming now. Those are all those plants that I told you guys not to touch earlier in the year when we were doing dormant pruning. So I'm thinking about things like lilacs, azaleas, things that bloomed really early, that if we had pruned them during dormant pruning time, we would have cut off those flower buds. So if your plant has already bloomed for the year, right now is exactly the time that you should be pruning. So it's the time to go out there on your lilacs and your azaleas if you want to do some size reduction pruning, if you need to do just some maintenance pruning or thinning pruning. Lilacs, you know, we like to kind of thin out a third of those older canes at this time of year. But if you are pruning those things now, then that gives the plant all summer and into fall to set those flower buds for next season. And pruning them, you know, later in the summer and even fall is going to do the same thing that it would do during the dormant pruning season in, you know, February, March. It would cut off those flower buds. So right now is the time for early season shrubs and trees that have already bloomed. It's time to get your pruners out and give those a little haircut.
Get your pruners out. 314-436-7900 is the number to call and ask your question of Michelle. Up next, we go to Sue. Good morning, Sue.
Hi. I just laying in bed listening, and I heard Michelle say that serviceberry was a bush. And I've got, I built into the woods, so right outside my deck was a beautiful serviceberry. I thought a tree. It was the first thing to come out in the spring and the first thing to lose its leaves in the fall. And it did have white flowers and berries. But it's dying from the top. And I called somebody to come out and take a look at it and then take it down. Whatever it's dying, I don't want it to get onto the dogwood that's right next to it, because the dogwood is big and beautiful. It's from the woods. So I could use a little help with that.
So, yeah, so I service berries can be tree form. They can be shrub form. Okay. There are types that stay small, and there are types that get quite large. So, you know, they're both forms, trees or shrubs. And then as far as yours goes, if it is, you know, like on the edge of a woodline or you know, in a little bit shadier spot, sometimes it does get some fungal issues, or can sometimes, you know, even get some crown rot if it's covered with leaf litter. Doesn't always like to be you know, covered up at the base. So it sounds like yours is struggling, and if it's struggling enough that, you know, the majority of it is dead, or there's a concern that it might spread elsewhere, then definitely the thing to do is remove it and maybe pick a different tree for that area that might do a little bit better in those conditions.
Is there something, a disease with the word black in it? Because I had a young man out here several years ago, and there were several small trees just like the service. They were service berries, but very small.
It could be black spot. I don't know if that's what it is. That's the only thing I can think of with the word black in it. That's a disease problem, but that's a fungal disease that sometimes plants get.
Okay, because that killed off the small ones. And does your company come out to Eureka area?
We sure do. If you want to, you know, give us a call, we can send somebody out and evaluate. I think we need to take a break now, though. Thank you for your call. You guys are listening to The Garden Hotline on KMOX, the voice of St. Louis.
Thanks for tuning in to The Garden Hotline on 104.1 FM KMOX. Michelle Reeser-West here answering your questions about whatever gardening topics you have to what you're dealing with right now this time of year. We're just full of information, Michelle. You
so
just
much.
Looked up. We were talking, today's Preakness Day, and I was saying earlier that the Black-Eyed Susan was the official flower of the Preakness because it's the state flower of Maryland and the races in Baltimore. However, you pointed out that Black-Eyed Susans are not in bloom in May.
They're not. They typically are June, July bloomers and into the summer. So, but they use a different flower. Yeah. They still want you to think it's a black-eyed Susan because it's the tradition.
Right.
But it's actually a type of chrysanthemum that they're using and not a black-eyed Susan.
Yeah, I saw something called a Viking palm.
Yeah.
Which POM.
Yeah, they look very similar.
They look very similar. So I didn't know. I was being fooled all these years.
They're lying to you, but they got to keep up appearances. They gotta say it's the black-eyed Susan.
They still call the drink the black-eyed Susan and is frankly terrible.
What is it?
I don't even remember. It's not good.
Why do these horse races have to have their own special little
and
weird
they're all
drinks?
Bad. Yeah. I mean, they're not good. The mint julep's okay. I mean, mint julep's all right.
I've never had
just
one,
so
but it doesn't.
Just so sweet and... Anyway,
yeah,
we're not here to talk about horse racing. We're here to answer your questions. Michelle is anyway. 314-436-7900. That's the number. That's the Garden Hotline. Cindy, good morning. You're on with Michelle.
Hi. You just were making a comment about mulching. I was hoping maybe Michelle could go into kind of the correct way to mulch because a lot of the trees, people pile that mulch up. Some people call them mulch volcanoes now. That really, that if you don't see the tree flare, the root flare of a tree, that tree is actually destabilized because their roots can't grow properly. So maybe Michelle can kind of let everybody know the correct way to plant trees and especially the correct way to mulch.
Cindy, I like you already. Thanks for that call. And I love talking about this. I think it's something that is a really simple thing to do in correcting and how you're putting down your mulch. But it actually starts with the tree planting. Like she was saying, the root flare on the tree is really important to identify. And it starts, like I said, at the time of planting. And the root flare is basically where the base of the trunk, the first set of roots, flare out from the actual trunk itself. So it's very important to have that above grade. So one of the things that you need to do from the time of planting is to identify where that root flare is. And sometimes it is covered up by soil from it being dug. So before you even plant your tree, you need to identify where that root flare is and then dig your hole according to the height of the root ball or the container that it's in so that that root flare is slightly above grade. You want to almost have a little hump or a little bit of, where you can see the circle above grade. And then when you're mulching, especially with trees, well, really with anything, you want to make sure that you're not over mulching or getting that mulch right back up on top of that root flare. And one of the reasons why we do this, especially with trees, is that if you cover up that root flare, the tree roots can make new roots that can send out girdling roots, which are roots that basically choke the tree and it can die. So making sure that when you're mulching your trees, you are not, I mean, we don't even typically put mulch all the way up. We like to leave a very light layer covering that root flare, and then you can put more mulch or heavier mulch a little bit further out. And that's really the same with shrubs and perennials as well. They don't, most plants, if you think about, where they are natively, or at least the plants that we're using here in Missouri, they are covered by leaf litter in their native areas or, other organic material. They're not covered in wood chips where they're typically growing. So when you're mulching shrubs, even perennials, putting too much at the base can cause, root rot. It can cause them to just not be healthy. It can have fungal disease at the base of plants. It can have open it up for other pests to come in. So it's really important that when you're mulching anything that you are avoiding over mulching the crown of the plants. But it's something that is very common. Like she was saying, we call them mulch volcanoes when you're just kind of piling that mulch up on the top of the tree and you kind of make a volcano shape around it. You definitely want to pull that mulch back. And then if you have a more established tree that already has, a mulch volcano or too much mulch on it, it's not too late most of the time to kind of excavate some of the soil around the base of that. And it will just make your tree a lot happier and healthier in the long run.
Thanks for your question this morning, Cindy. The number to call is 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Sue. You're on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Hi, good morning. It's a beautiful morning after the storms yesterday. Hey, I have a question about a tree that I took down last year. When I moved in the house about 12 years ago, it was beautiful. It was a weeping vertical tree. I always called it the purple fountain, which obviously isn't the real name, but the leaves were a purplish copper color. And it was a beautiful tree, but they planted it too close to the house, so I had to have it cut down last year. Anyway, I'm trying to plant something near the base of it. And how far out do I have to go before I can replant?
So did you get the stump ground out, or is the stump still there?
The stump is there because they said it was too close to my foundation to grind it out.
Yeah, and that may be the case. I think a lot of times the people with the stump grinding like to err on the side of caution when it is up against, foundation or something like that. So basically, you're going to have to investigate what's underground. You're going to need to be able to dig a hole that's twice the size of the root ball, twice the size of the container. So that's basically what you're going to, need to figure out, like, how far are the big roots out from the existing stump, and how willing are you to either remove those roots underground? Some of them are small and might be easy to get out of there, or some of them might be bigger and it might be too much work for you to kind of remove those. So as long as you're hitting good soil and you're able to dig a nice hole that's twice the size of the root ball of whatever you're planting, then that's basically the distance that you need to plant away from that existing root system. I don't know how large that other tree was that came out. So it may have a more significant underground root system. So you probably just need to get a shovel out and kind of do some investigating, and that will help you determine where you can plant that tree.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much for your help. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling in, Sue. Up next, let's go to Shelley. Good morning, Shelley. You're on the Garden Hotline.
Good morning. I have a very large hydrangea, oak leaf hydrangea on the south side of my house. I think it's an Alice. The blooms, when they do well, they can be up in excess of a pound each. So it's huge. But it is very pale yellowish green, and I don't really know what to do for it. I've tried adding iron to the soil, and that doesn't seem to do anything for it. But it just looks sickly yellowy green.
So the best thing that you can do is a soil test. Adding fertilizers or other amendments and things like that may not actually be what the plant needs. So without knowing what is in the soil around it, and even the pH, because if the pH is off, that could mean that the plant is unable to even take in the nutrients that it's lacking. So it could be that the pH is off and needs to be adjusted in some way. So soil sampling or soil testing is super simple and relatively inexpensive. The University of Missouri Extension Office, you can do it in St. Charles County and St. Louis County. I'm sure there's other locations that you can send them off to. You can send them off to, the University of Missouri in Columbia yourself. But getting that soil sample and sending that off, and you can specifically tell them when you send that sample in that you have a garden bed or landscape bed with an oak leaf hydrangea, and they will send you back the report and tell you what you need to do in order to make that soil or to improve the health of that hydrangea. So, I mean, you can always guess at what nutrients it might need or put down different products. You can adjust watering and things like that, but without actually knowing what the soil is, it's hard to know what to put down.
Okay, one other quick question about the hydrangea is, we're thinking about moving. Is there a specific time of year that's good or bad to move a large hydrangea?
Yeah, just when it's cool. So either in the fall, September, October timeframe, where it has some time to get rooted in. I like transplanting larger things in the fall because every bit of energy from that plant is going to its roots. And that's what we want to focus on when we transplant. When you plant things in the spring, some energy is going to the roots, but a lot of energy is going to growth and creating more plant, basically. So it's energy isn't as focused on the roots, but as long as you do it with enough time, like if you do it in the spring, you do it early before the heat of the summer gets here. If you do it in the fall, give it plenty of time before it freezes. But thanks for your call. And we're going to take a quick break. Call us at 314-436-7900. This is KMOX Garden Hotline.
It is the Garden Hotline on KMOX this morning. Answering your questions is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping. The number to call with your question is 314-436-7900. Up next, let's say hello to Roman. Good morning, Roman.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a new resident to St. Louis, just moved here in February, and I don't know a lot about what will grow here, and Google has not helped me understand the answer to this question. In our old house, we used to have a jasmine trellis that we had planted, and we would love to have that in our new house, but we can't get a clear answer as to whether or not it will grow here in what I guess is called Zone 7.
Jasmine typically does not grow here. You could grow it as an annual. And there may be a variety that might do well here in a protected area. I can't think of the cultivar off the top of my head. But I do believe there is one... it's like a hardy jasmine for zone 6. So there is one around, but it isn't reliable for us, which just means that, you know, if it's in the right spot, you might be able to get it to get established. I would also recommend if you're going to plant it that you do it in the springtime to give it plenty of time to get rooted in and established before the winter temperatures come. And then as opposed to planting in the fall, and it may not get those roots established because without the established root system, it won't have a chance at all to make it through our winter. But I can't remember. You might check with a local nursery. There's a couple around that kind of have a little bit of more different selections than others. You might check with Greenscape Gardens. Garden Heights often has some interesting plant choices. And you might even look on Mobot's website, the Missouri Botanical Garden, and do a search for jasmine or do a Google search for jasmine, Missouri Botanical Garden. They have a lot of really good information about plants that do well, specific plants that do well for us here in Missouri or cultivars that might do well for you. So that would be a good research. It's definitely not a common plant. I can't think of ever seeing it here in St. Louis.
We haven't seen it here anywhere, and we haven't seen it at the botanical gardens when we go. But I appreciate the information. That probably saves us a lot of trouble.
Yeah, I mean, there's some other alternatives. We have a native vine here. It's the native honeysuckle vine. That's pretty cool. Has a great smell. Could be a great alternative to doing the jasmine.
That sounds like a great alternative. Thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call, Roman. 314-436-7900. Up next, we have Ellen. Good morning, Ellen. You're on with Michelle.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And I have lilac that smells, and I didn't cut it back last year, and it came up all dry. And so I don't know. I cut it all the dry part off, and some of it is coming up green, but are they required to be cut off every year? And then the other thing that I have is I put a lot of daffodils in the middle of my garden. So now I don't have anything in the middle of my garden. And I was wondering if there was anything I could plant on top of the bulbs and they would come up, or should I just be happy?
Those are great questions. Is the daffodil area in full sun or shade or...
It's in full sun.
Okay. So let's start with your lilac. It's definitely not a plant that you have to prune every single year. If it is a little bit older, I would recommend doing some pruning on it every season to remove some of the older canes. It sounds like you're having, some health issues with it. And I'm thinking about a lot of things that, could be causing it. Lilacs do get a lot of powdery mildew, which can cause leaves and smaller branches to die and have like a dried out kind of appearance. So I would watch for that. I haven't seen a lot of powdery mildew just yet, but it's time. So if you do have powdery mildew, it just looks like it kind of sounds. It sounds like a white powder that's on the leaves. And if that's the case,
what would I use for that?
You can either remove if it's bad enough, especially on those branches that maybe are dead from last season. I would go ahead and remove that. Anything with a fungal thing, you need to try to remove and get that away from the plant so it doesn't spread. And then you can use a copper fungicide is what I would recommend spraying on it in order to prevent it from spreading further. And again, just pruning out anything that's dead or has the disease. Or any of the leaves that might drop over the summer, just keeping that area clean. And if you are pruning, make sure you're cleaning your tools. That's a big thing in gardening, is if you're pruning something that is diseased, it's really important to clean your pruners in between plants. That's also important a lot in roses. You can spread a lot of pathogen from the blades of your pruner, from the liquid and the gunk that gets on the blades. So scrubbing your pruner with, like a little green kitchen scrubby or something like that, and spraying with alcohol or Lysol to kill those pathogens before you go and prune something else so it doesn't spread anything. And then as far as your daffodils, they are totally fine to be interplanted with other things, especially right now where you can see the daffodils, where the foliage still is. If you're not ready to plant now, you might flag those or take a picture of where they are so you can plant later this fall. But most perennials will be fine. Just be careful when you're digging your hole that you're not disturbing those bulbs too much. But, a lot of plants are really good, to plant around most bulbs where you have that kind of succession planting where you're having the display from the spring show of the daffodils. And then as those fade out, something else is coming in. We use a lot of grasses for that. You could use the Allium Millennium that we were talking about earlier in the show. But most perennials do well interplanted with daffodils. So good luck with your pruning and your lilac. And I hope you find something pretty to plant with those daffodils. Thanks for your call. We're going to take short break. We're going to have plenty of time for a speed round, our final round.
Last round.
You guys can call us 314-436-7900. And phone lines are open for our final 10 minutes.
Reeser West answering your questions this morning at 314-436-7900. Joan, you are up next. Good morning.
Good morning. Love your show. This is my question. I have a holly tree. It's about 50 years old, very close to the house. And the leaves are turning yellow, starting to drop. And there's like some crevices at the bottom of the trunk. And there's a kind of a crack even at the bottom of the tree. And I'm thinking it's dying. I don't know. What is your opinion?
Yeah, so the hollies here in St. Louis sometimes struggle a lot. It sounds like yours is pretty old and established, which is impressive, again, for our St. Louis area, because hollies don't always love it here. In fact, I don't always recommend planting them, and we don't plant them that often unless somebody specifically requests them because of, the issues that they have, especially with winter damage. And, just the long-term health. They're not always long-term trees for us. And it sounds like, the yellowing of the leaves, dropping of the leaves is very common. Without seeing the crevices or the cracks in the trunk, I can't be sure, but that doesn't sound like a great thing, and it often isn't. It often is an indicator that there's something worse going on with the tree, and it could be, you know, again, it could be fungal, it could be a bacterial thing, but it is definitely an indicator that your tree is stressed. Both the cracks that you're seeing and the dropping of the leaves. So I really think that, especially if it's a high value tree for you, if it's something that you want to keep in your yard, that you that you call out a professional arborist to evaluate, because there may be things and treatments that they can do in order to make that tree healthier. If it is some kind of pathogen that can be treated in some way, they can do that more effectively than most of our homeowner products that are available. So definitely, if it's something that you're wanting to save, I would definitely recommend calling out an arborist to evaluate that for you.
Sounds great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joan. Up next, we have Jean. Good morning. You're on the Garden Hotline with Michelle.
Good morning. I received a pink hydrangea for Mother's Day, and it came from a supermarket florist rather than a nursery. Can I plant it outdoors? And if so, what is the best location?
So, yes, you can. Last spring, we used some like supermarket sized hydrangeas for container planting. And when we were done with our spring displays, I didn't have the heart to throw them away. So I stuck them in the ground. I think we had about 10. And I have, I think, 3 that are still alive. So they aren't always, you know, the hardiest that come from the grocery store, but it is possible to plant them. So that type, the pink hydrangea that you got, is likely a hydrangea macrophylla, which will prefer, it can take some sun. It prefers a place where it definitely has some protection from the afternoon sun and heat. So someplace maybe with morning sun and afternoon shade, a part shade situation is preferable. Okay. Again, it can take full sun. It just isn't going to, it's not going to love it, especially getting established. But I would get it in the ground as soon as possible, like I said earlier, just to give it enough time before the heat of the summer gets here. And then, you know, just keep it consistently. Yeah, keep it consistently watered. And it may take, I assume it's smaller if it came from the grocery store, so it may take a few seasons in order for it to get well established and get big enough to put on a good show for you outside. But I think that it's definitely possible for you to transplant that successfully.
Okay, and I have another question. I have holly bushes similar to, and they're only like 3 years old, so they're small. And each year at this time of the year, I get some yellow leaves, and I try to, you know, take them off as I see them. It's not a real big problem, but I was wondering if there's anything I can spray them with. They're beautiful. They get a lot of berries, and they look healthy, except this time of the year, they get those little yellow leaves.
Yeah, so hollies, again, don't love it here in St. Louis. They get a lot of winter damage, and we see some of that now as they're pushing out new growth. It can drop some. They also get a lot of fungal issues. So you could do a dormant spray, of like a horticulture oil or dormant spray before it breaks dormancy to help with that. And then now you could spray them with like copper fungicide or something like that in order to help prevent any spread if it is a fungal issue. But removing anything that falls off and then pruning out any dead or diseased stuff, that'll help from the spread making things worse.
So a dormant spray before they go into dormancy, and then now I should spray them with a copper fungicide, you said?
Yeah, and before they break dormancy, so that's going to be in, like, March.
Okay, so it's too late to spray them now with the copper fungicide?
No, you can spray with copper fungicide. That's for the dormant oil you would do in March. So right now you can definitely spray. Yep.
In March, do it. Okay, thank you so much.
Thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call. And Melvin is up next. Good morning, Melvin.
Good morning. I enjoy your program. In reference to an earlier caller, I grow the star jasmine, or sometimes it's called Confederate jasmine, but I grow it in a container with a small trellis, and then I overwinter it, and it is really nice, and it's just starting to bloom now, and the fragrance is just wonderful. And I just wanted to quickly ask you about, I ordered a hardy Chicago fig, and it's going to be bare root, and I'm going to start it in a container, and I just wondered what suggestions you might have for me.
So thank you for the thought about growing in containers. I didn't mention that, but that's a great suggestion for anyone who wants to grow something that doesn't typically do well here, is to grow things in containers and then try to overwinter them in a heated garage or, you know, a basement or someplace that it won't freeze or be affected by our frost and lower temperatures. So that is a great suggestion. And then as far as your hardy fig goes, I think, you know, if you are going to start it in a container, which is probably a good idea to get it established, the only thing I would recommend is to not plant it this fall, per se, or if you do, make sure you plant it early, late summer, early fall, so it has plenty of time to get rooted in, or it may have trouble getting through our cold freezes over the winter. But I think you should be successful. It's a good variety to try here in Missouri. So thanks for your call. And
we've got one more. We've got time for one more question.
Perfect.
All right, John, you're up next. Good morning.
Good morning. I have an extensive amount of annuals in my yard. And they look real nice, but now I've got a lot of weeds coming up. Is there anything I can do to prevent or to stop that?
So I think putting down a pre-emergent is probably a little too late because you already have the weeds, but you can still put it down. It's not too late to put it down, but you're going to probably, because they're growing through annuals and it's heavily planted, you're going to have to eradicate those by hand. But then putting down a pre-emergent around those plants or through those plants will help from any future weeds from germinating from seed. Definitely something that if you do before the weeds get here and then do it consistently, I think typically we put down pre-emergent 2 to 3 times per season.
Okay, so the preen or whatever pre-emergent I use won't hurt the foliage of the annuals if you just sprinkle it?
Yeah, you need to sprinkle around it. Try not to get it down, like if it's, you know, like a cup or a tube form of perennial, you don't want to get that down into those buds. But if you're careful and go around the plants, it shouldn't be a problem.
Thanks for the call, John. We appreciate it. And that's going to do it for this edition of the Garden Hotline. Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscaping, thank you as always for your knowledge and an enjoyable show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Talk to you soon. Thanks for tuning in on 104.1 FM KMOX.